going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive. Up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
Thanks so much, Capital. That's right. It is another edition of the Going Deep podcast. I am Donovan Bennett, and we are We Eden once again. Yes, it's your favorite series, and we're doing it on Going Deep. Again, a different version this time. This time we are at Barbarian's Steakhouse. So shout out to Chef Jesse and the entire crew that took care of us and kept us fed. And it was food for my stomach, but also food for my soul and my mind, as we had a great conversation with members of the NHL Player Inclusion Coalition, the PIC for short. It was me, obviously. It was your boy, Cabrel Richards, but also I was joined by Kevin Shattenkirk, Stanley Cup champion and current member of the Boston Bruins, and George Laroque, one of the most beloved players, not only here in Canada, but across the league, still beloved now as an alumni and is still giving back to the game as alumni, is he was one of a couple members of the Player Inclusion Coalition. Mark Fraser, someone who has been on this podcast in the past, Al Montoyo, Anthony Stewart, and others. And what they did actually was they went across the locker rooms in the NHL and had sessions which included conversation around race, ethnicity, belonging. They shared some personal stories, some life experiences, some hockey experiences, given their diverse backgrounds and diverse paths into the game. But prior to visiting those locker rooms, each one of them got professional training on how to connect from another former guest of this podcast, someone we need to get back on the pod soon because he's so wise. That would be Professor John Amici, former NBA player. And right now, internationally renowned psychologist and leadership development consultant. He helped them decide how they were going to connect with players of today. Because you know what it's like. You've been in training, whether it was your job or an assembly at school, and you're kind of rolling your eyes thinking, how quickly can I get out of here? But these conversations were really important. They're something that actually were birthed by not necessarily just the league on their own, but the Player Inclusion Coalition, which, as you may remember, as we've talked to them a couple times on the pod, started a couple years ago, and they're not just speaking these things into existence. They're literally putting money where their mouth is as well. Some strategic grants to organizations advancing all things DEI in hockey, collectively amounting to $175,000 USD to date, with up to $750,000 USD available for player-driven projects in partnership with the NHL and the NHLPA Industry Growth Fund. That's a fund that we talked about again on a previous episode of the pod. So scroll down the feed if you like this conversation. Speaking of feed, apologies for the noise, because we certainly were eating as we're sharing. But that's what happens in hockey spaces, whether it's in meals after a game, on the road, finding great restaurants. Sometimes when you break bread, you break down those barriers. And I wanted to hear from Kevin and George what it was like for them during their careers. Kevin's career is obviously still going. And what this conversation has been like post-George Floyd in these spaces. We Eden on the work being done by the NHL PIC on Going Deep.
I don't even know where to start.
Well, thank you for bringing this together, bro. That's a great place to start. Thank you.
Well, we have to eat like the way these guys eat when they're on the road, because I feel like this is the hockey culture, where on the road with the team, you go out, have a meal, break bread, get together with the fellas.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's nice when you have 20 built-in friends. You get to go to all these cool new cities and, you know, experience obviously different restaurants and you know, go tour around cities. So this is pretty on par for what we do.
Same in your era, George?
Oh yeah, it was. It's and also it was different because I wasn't vegan in the beginning of my career. Towards the end, it was different because I looked for different restaurant and. Guys, not everyone wants to go to a vegan restaurant, that's for sure.
You're eating solo, bro. You're just like you and your headphones and maybe your phone.
But nutrition now, as we were talking with Kevin, is changing a lot nowadays than it used to be back then. Back then, it was steakhouse every night, every meal, you know, like we're on the road. But now, it's guys are way more conscious about it, and it's awesome to see.
Back then, were you taking down one of these old steaks, my dude?
I think double plate that.
The whole train?
The whole train. Yeah.
Thank you for saving some for us.
thank you for changing your diet so that we can enjoy this food as well.
Let's dig in.
Cool. I'm going to get some salad going just to make sure I feel good.
Don't be shy.
Myself.
Don't be shy, Kev.
You know?
Let me get some salad going. Yeah. Because it's on camera.
Yeah,
it would just be me.
As soon as this cuts, throw this plate away.
Does it still, when you guys are on the road, like, is credit card roulette still a thing, or is everybody just like, just, you know, separate checks? How does it work generally?
Credit card roulette's still in play.
That's pressure.
That's one of the best moments of the meal. You know, is that seeing everyone sweat. But you know, I think you know, you split it down the middle. Usually, that's kind of usually the norm. I would say is. As long as no one's going off the board and ordering like $160 Wagyu steak,
right?
You can split it down the middle. It all kind of evens out in the end.
Or the most expensive bottle, like the bottle that's way up
there. Yeah, exactly. But you never know. If it's a night to celebrate, get on the ladder and go get that bottle.
Do you learn more about your guys in terms of what motivates them, their backstories, their history, that some of the differences and some of the similarities in those spaces?
Well, it's always on the road that they always say that that's when the team always get closer, get together, because at home you have games, you have family and everything, right? On the road, you're on the bus together and the plane together. So, yes, you do spend way more time together and when you talk. And that's when you get to know your teammates even more when you're there, because you're there 24/7, everything that you do, breakfast, lunch, and dinner. So it's awesome. And even sometimes when a team has struggled a bit, a couple games in a row at home, often you're excited to go back on the road, so to get that team bonding back, and then you could build that chemistry again.
Have you noticed a difference throughout your career in terms of the stuff guys are willing to talk about?
I think so. You know, this is my 14th year, so I think, you know, you look at the world in general, there's much bigger focus on mental health, you know, and connecting with people and making sure that, you know, your friends are all right, just checking in and seeing how they're doing. And I think because of that, you know, people are more open, players are more open. You've seen a lot of teams bring in, you know, sports psychologists make that a focus in the locker room, you know, and I think it's been great. It's healthy for a locker room. The teams that I've been on that have been the most successful have been the closest teams, been the closest groups. And I think you go much further as a team when you're all well connected. And when you can share those moments with each other and know, you know, how to help your teammate out when it's time, when you know, maybe he's not speaking and you might know something's up, you check in on. It's great.
You actually were brought in to speak to players. So you guys are both part of the Players Inclusion Coalition, and then one of the things that was cool is a bunch of you went across the league and spoke. You learned from John Amici on kind of how to build that talk. What was that like?
Well, the training to start with John Amici in New York was amazing because he's the job that he does and to talk and to get the attention of the room, to bring that subject, it was so important because you get into a room where with athletes that you got to do it a different way. You got to do it in a way that is interactive, so you get their attention, because it's not an easy subject to talk to in a room of athlete. You want to catch your attention, so you want to make it interactive. So it was a good training that we did with him, And it was awesome also that we got to practice a bit and during the rookie orientation in Washington with the rookies, and the PA was there, they were listening to us to see what it was going to look like going to the dressing room, because we wanted to make sure that it was going to be adequate for the dressing room talk that we do with the players. So it was an awesome process to get to there. It took years of preparation, but I'd say that it was very well received, having these talks in the room and exchange with guys. It was coming because for many reasons, with a lot of things that's happened in the last couple of years, we thought that the timing, it was a good timing to do so, to have these conversations, to make sure that, to show, it's one thing to say that the hockey is for everyone, but if you want to say that the league, you want to be diverse, you want to make sure that there's no incident that happens, right? So to talk about many different subjects with players and to exchange, talk to them and ask them questions behind closed door, no media, no one's there, just us and them, I thought it was awesome, and it was well-received and a really positive experience.
What kind of stuff are you guys talking about?
Oh, man, we talk about, you talk about the beginning of the NHL, like how the game has evolved. You know, we talk about, let's say, European players, like the present European players before the NHL wasn't there because of, you know, the stereotype that European players are soft, and now they got a chance, and now the face of the league would be without them, right? We talk about the importance of diversity. So European players make the league global today. So if you want to make the league even more global and even more popular in the States, when we talk about diversity, it's important also with different minorities, especially black minorities, where there's less and less that are playing. So we talk about that, ways to open up the games, a way to make the game more accessible. And we talk about some incident also that happens to make sure that if anyone was to witness anything, they could become an ally, because you guys know, you should, and Kevin, you would know that in the hockey world, we're thought to not to say anything, not to be a distraction. So maybe if you hear something, you hear a racist comment to one of your teammates, to someone else, you're not going to say anything because it's just easier. You just want to close your eyes. In these dressing room talk, we're teaching them not to do so, to be an ally, to denounce it if it was to happen, because then the guy that you're playing with, when you see that you have his back, you feel a sense of belonging. You feel like hockey family, and it's more important to be tied in together, right? So there's many little things like this that you talk about to make sure that guys understand if something was to happen, and it could prevent in the future any bad situation that could happen.
It's got to be tough to break down that culture in the sport, because hockey, generally, everything's so collective. Right? You guys go away at a young age, build it together, you give answers, it's always we, it's about the team, like short shifts, it's all about sacrifice. So you never want to put yourself out there. We're in basketball and football, it's more about me. The aspect of getting people to be a little bit more comfortable speaking out and pointing something out, even if it might be bad. How do you break down that cultural expectation to protect the group at all costs?
I mean, I think it goes back to that. You're protecting your group. I think for sure that hockey has maybe tamed personalities, you know, no self is bigger than the team. But in these instances that George is talking about, I mean, it's a separate ballgame. You know, it's speaking out for a reason. And like you said, supporting your teammates. And I think that's the root of hockey. That's the root of the culture of hockey, is no matter what, you have a band of brothers and they're going to stick by you. And we need to make sure that we're staying as inclusive as possible and making sure that we're opening those doors and allowing, you know, young kids from, the BIPOC community, whatever it might be, to know that they have a place and know that they're going to be supported when they come into, you know, the hockey environment and into that culture.
I make these talks interesting, though, bro. Because I don't know, we'll go and talk at schools
And we were the kids, like, in the assembly hall, like, in high school, falling asleep during those talks.
And then now... I thought you were going to say, like, we were, like, the one kid, like, in the whole... In the whole assembly, that's like the one black kid, like,
yes,
in the
schools
that we went to.
Yes, but in general, like, you know, some speaker would come in, try to keep those kids engaged.
Right.
Now we're giving the talk, trying to keep those kids engaged.
Yeah. Not doing so well.
Yeah, no, not doing so well. But how do you structure it? Because for some people, I imagine, it's just going to be like medicine. Like, I have to go to this meeting room, we're going to have a talk, right? It's kind of like, you know, testing or all the other things that you have to do that day before you're released. How do you make sure that it hits?
Well, first of all, the length is very important. If it's too long, you're not going to catch your attention. Because after practice, the guys have to go home. They're tired. So you can't be too long. If it's too long, guys are getting, they're getting meetings all the time. So, you know, their time is so important, right? So the length is one important thing. And the interaction also is important. When you go in there and you talk to someone, if you lecture somebody for 45 minutes, forget it. You're not going to catch your attention. They're like... Human beings, they're intelligent. You have a conversation with them. You educate. You don't lecture. It's the way you do the delivery. And also you ask questions. Because remember, there's no media. Close the door. So when you close the door and then no media, no one in the outside is there, and you ask them their thoughts about some subject that you bring up, and someone asks a question, there's no dumb question. It's just between us, right? It's an environment that is much easier to ask a question because you never want to look stupid. And when someone asks one, and then the room just opens up. And then sometimes, because everyone asks questions sometimes, especially people not issued from a minority family, sometimes they want to know what's right and what's wrong, or a situation that happened. What should I do if this happened, right? So then they'll ask these questions to be educated, and then we have a conversation all together. And then sometimes other guys jumps in about things that has happened. There's guide issued from tons of different minorities, you know, in the NHL and teams that we played on. So when we talked in the dressing room, there's guys that had different experiences that they shared with us when we had this talk. So that's what's so awesome, is that at the part of the questioning, and it becomes interactive, when everybody's asking questions and then talking one together and stuff, and then you're learning about the teammates that are talking about an incident that happened, sometimes people didn't even know. Oh my God, he's my teammate, and I didn't even know he went through that. And that's so interesting, because then after that, he's like, oh, wow. And then it opens up the conversation. And even after those visits sometimes that we do, sometimes guys, when they talk to one another, you know, learning about the culture of somebody, not just, you know, soft talk, but, you know, like talking and be interested in stuff so people could feel a sense of belonging. It's just amazing. Conversation that you have, but again, it's the way you deliver in it, and you make it interactive, and it works. Guys, the trust and environment, you smile, and you just educate them, and it's awesome. And it'd be awesome to know from you, Kevin, how it was received, because since you're playing now and stuff, and you had Al Montoya that came in your room, how was that speech received when he came to your team?
Yeah, you know, I think, like you said, that the speech, the entire program is meant to break down kind of that uncomfortability factor of asking that first question, you know, of how do I navigate this? How can I help? How can I, you know, support my teammates? And with Al, you know, he spoke about being, you know, Cuban-American player, you know, really having English as a second language and navigating locker rooms as a young kid through that, you know, and then how it carried on into, you know, his pro career and some of the unfortunate incidents he had to go through with, you know, I think a radio show in Winnipeg, you know, that was maybe a little, you know, out of line with some of the comments they were making and the comparisons they were making to him for being Cuban. But I think what, you know, came out of it was he talked about how his teammates supported him, how they really wanted to find out, like you said, more about his culture and learn about him and where he came from. And it now that we're having these conversations, it allowed us as a team to start talking about, hey, you know, the player that comes over from Sweden who may not be able to speak, you know, English very well, what's it gonna, how's he gonna feel if you make fun of him for trying to say a new word, in, you know, in English? How's, what, you think he's gonna keep speaking? You think he's gonna keep talking? How's that gonna feel for, you know, a minority player to come in the locker room and look around and, you know, maybe he's the only one in the locker room? Are you gonna go up there and, you know, introduce yourself and get him involved? Or are you gonna shun him and he's never gonna feel comfortable in that locker room? And I think that's what we, you know, strive to do with this entire, you know, coalition and with this program, is to get to that point where no matter who walks in your locker room, they have an equal playing field, they have an even, you know, even chance, and more importantly, they feel like they're a part of that locker room from the day they step in there.
What's your guys' like approaches to having some of these conversations? A lot of times they're not comfortable. They're not like easy to do unless there's, you're reacting to something that happened in the world, some incident or whatever. Like, how do you, how would you approach someone who maybe is like, this doesn't really have to do with me. Like, I, this is not something I've grown up with. It could be, you know, it could be someone from a different background. It could be someone who speaks a different language. But then there is, I don't know, they, I imagine the approach would be tricky because you don't want to lecture anybody. You want to engage them right away. And you want to kind of see like where they're at and like help to steer them. So like, I don't know how many personal conversations you've had like this, but what is your approach when you're trying to enlighten someone or try to give someone like a little bit more perspective than they're coming into the room with?
You know, I think my approach has always been, you know, if, you know, a certain situation, like, do you think that was right? You know, do you feel deep in your heart that that was, you know, the right thing to do? Or, you know, is it something that you feel you need to speak out on, you know, and that doesn't sit well with you? And if you, you know, if something that happens, you know, in the world, you know, whether it's, you know, someone being shot wrongfully by the police, you know, like it's you should be able to have a voice and you should be able to speak out about that regardless of whether you feel it's right or wrong. You know, I think like you need to know that you have a voice and it can be talked about in the locker room. And again, I think that's why you build these relationships with your teammates, because you should have the opportunity to say what you feel and debate about it, hopefully have a healthy debate about it, but you should be able to let them know how you feel and have that space to be able to project your voice. That's kind of how I've always felt.
And also to answer your question, to add to what you're saying is, I've been to rooms where guys would say, why do I have to get involved?
Right.
You know why? My job is to play hockey. My job is to play hockey. So I've had these conversations with guys, and I love that they were honest enough to, somebody's honest enough to ask me this while I'm doing this at the end, is because they're fully confident that they could ask any question and it's okay with it. And I know that, you know, a subject like this, not everybody's built to be the voice and to stand up for anything that happens. So when someone does this, you know, I explain to them how, you know, as a team, we're a team all together, right? And if an incident was to happen, all together, collectively, we have to take a stance for our teammates if something was to happen to our teammates. And it's so important to understand the situation and the respect. Because even if you don't want to have a voice and you don't want to get involved, because some guys just want to play hockey, the most important thing that you have to take in for what we're doing right now is respect. If, let's say, there's no minorities in your team, you never know if tomorrow you could trade it to a team that has some. You never know if somebody is going to come in. You never know at any point of your career. You never know if you're ever going to witness an incident. So just part of indication that you know how to react. And you'll know how, you'll have an understanding how it feels, even though you don't feel it inside of you. So, and if people still don't want to say anything, they don't have to. But at least the thing that we expect from everyone is the respect. Make sure that you're never going to say anything stupid. you're not gonna do anything stupid, because now you had that education, and now you know what's right and what's wrong, even if you don't wanna be a voice.
So that's at the locker room level, where you guys are peers, but above that, whether it's coaching, executive level, front office, is there still an aspect of, if I speak out, oh, I'm a distraction. You're not just focusing on the game. Is there some fear still currently about that aspect?
Okay, so to answer that, the hockey world, as you know, it's the way it is. Like, players are less vocal than some other sport. It's just almost the way that we were bred. You get into hockey, you don't just don't say anything, right? The NHL is encouraging more and more players to be vocal and to show their personality, because the more you show, the more popular you get to be, right? So, no, we're encouraging that. Nobody's saying that you cannot be vocal, but we know it's not for everyone, and it's okay. Some players will, some won't, but you know, I've never heard, and you could realize me on this, but I've never heard of, you know, a team telling a player to be less vocal on a social issue if a player wanted to, a situation like that. Have you heard anything
no,
like this?
No, definitely not. And I think it's more than anything, you teams just want to make sure that you're prepared. You know, that you're if you're going to speak out, you know, that you have the opportunity to say what you want to say, and a lot of them just give you every opportunity to, you know, to do that. So there's never been any sort of interference from, you know, the executive level in that that I've seen, which is great. And that's, you know, again, like George said, like, where we're trying to move to as a sport, for guys to be more vocal and be more outspoken on what they believe in.
What about in situations where, like, it's hard to speak? I mean, maybe the safer play is just not to say anything, because there are often times that your great line is, what's your end game? I don't know if people know that publicly, but Donovan a long time ago told me, like, before your Twitter fingers start firing off, just consider the question, what is your end game? Like, what are you trying to accomplish? And sometimes you don't have to speak about everything. There are a bunch of injustices in the world, or sometimes there are like huge tragedies, and it could be, I mean, you live in the United States, I mean, we all live in Canada, and this is more prevalent there, but like, it could be a tragedy at a school. Mm-hmm. Somebody with some issues came and harmed some kids. You know, sometimes, like, is there, you might feel really deep, like things need to change on a legislative level, but do you ever feel sometimes just like, is it worth using my platform? Not is it worth, that's the wrong way to frame it, but is this something that I should like stand on and risk getting the avalanche of either criticism or support? I mean, and that the example I gave is like a very specific one. But, you know, tragedies happen all the time. I guess, how do you do the calculus on when you will comment publicly about something, whether it's a tragedy or it's an injustice or what have you?
You know, when you have a platform, you do have to be careful. I understand what you're saying. There's some subject that if you want to comment on social media, make sure you educate it. Because sometimes it's uneducated comments you'll do that could get you in trouble. So that's why sometimes I can understand here at the moment, if you don't know the whole story and you say something, you just have to be careful. And that comes with being a professional player, right? So, and there's so many things that happen in society, like not just racism, but regarding many things. And sometimes you do see players, you know, putting comments and deleting them after and stuff like this, which I understand. But that's why what we do with our group, NHL Player Coalition Group, is educate players. So if they were to take a stand regarding anything attacking diversity or anything like this, they will know how to respond if they want to. That's really what we try to focus on, the education part of it. But again, it can cover every single little thing, like you're talking about, that happens in the world regarding every situation, right? But we do talk about how social media is a tool, but a dangerous tool also if you're not careful about it.
Of course, yeah.
Sometimes you can get in trouble if you're not careful about the stuff that you say in there because the world is watching you.
Got it, yeah.
The messenger matters too, though. So I'll be a little vocal on things when it comes to, you know, human rights issues, the way I see it. But I'll often get back, well, you don't understand. You didn't play. You're not from the hockey community. You're just making a big issue. You don't get it. And I was like, okay, fine. Like, I can't want better for your own sport than you within the sport. But whether it's issues of race or gender or, you know, the LGBTQ plus issues, often I'll hear, well, nothing to see here. We don't have a problem. You bringing it up is the problem. You guys are within the sport. Like, is there an acknowledgement that there should be some steps taken? Or do you hear and see the same?
There's, like you're talking about, like, the issue of LGBTQ, let's say, for example, every aspect of equality is important, you know? And we're taking a step of equality and movement in all these different departments, because when we say hockey is for everyone, it starts with the education, and it's important to talk about it and to join different causes. And it's not just our group, it's not just the dressing room talk, but it's getting involved in the community also for these different causes. LGBTQ is one cause too, that will have current former players and current players that are coming to these events. So it's be an example that educating and to make sure that we show everyone that they have the young kids that want to put them into hockey, they know that it's a safe sport. And it's for everyone, whatever gender you are, your sexual orientation, you're welcome to play this beautiful game of hockey. And it starts with a player like Kevin that is playing right now, that is, you know, going by example because he's in there joining those groups, playing with some kids and joining those different causes because they're looking up to him because he's playing in the NHL still today. And it's awesome. I speak loudly when you have current players that are playing right now that are joining this cause because he doesn't have to do this, he's playing right now. And the schedule is so hard and it's so demanding that we know the power of having current players speaking out. And especially, you know, what's better if you want to talk to minorities about hockey and getting involved, having a guy like him coming, talking about the importance of it. You know, and it shows that we're in United Nations. Everyone coming from all over the place is talking about the issue, how important it is to grow the sport. And that's why that support is so important, and it makes a huge difference. And we're attacking all the spheres to show everyone that hockey is for everyone.
Yes. No, I was just going to say, too, that, I mean, I think as a player, you know, you go to all these different cities, you skate around in warm-ups, and there's all different, you know, adults, kids, they're standing on the glass and all they want to do is just, you know, make eye contact with you, wave. And, you know, they could, like we just talked about, it's diverse. They could be from the LGBTQ plus community. They could be from, you know, the minority community. And that moment for them is so huge. And I think that's where our responsibility is as players, is to get out and, you know, be an ally and be able to open the door to hockey for young kids. Not, you know, even if they don't ever touch the ice and skate and play, like, if they know that the hockey community is one where they can go find a job, you know, later when they come out of college, selling, you know, ad space on boards at an arena. Like, if they know that this is a community where we welcome that, I think that's, you know, for me, the ultimate goal. And it's something that, you know, it's the reason why I'm involved in this.
I think that's a good time to take a break, cleanse the palate. And when we come back, more conversation with Kevin Shattenkirk and George LaRocque by myself and Cabrera Richards.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is a show.
And I'm so happy that you are listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had a show. Thank you.
All right, as we resume, a reminder, this is a conversation we had at Barbarian Steakhouse here in Toronto with Kevin Shattenkirk, George LaRocque, myself, and Cabral Richards. Let's go deep.
Law of averages says that both of you probably played with a player that is gay, whether you know about it or not. But we're not at a place where yet, anyways, people have been able to feel comfortable because of maybe the backlash from the world, never mind, within the sport. But I'd like to hope to think that the response actually would be the opposite, like to open up, you know, lots of doors and opportunities.
But you know, with what we do and all the different sensibilization campaign that we do, hopefully one day a current player that might be homosexual will come out. In team sport, in physical team sport, it's been hard, yes, to have a guy in the NHL that has come out, right? And often when players do so is when they're retired. So hopefully one day, and I do hope that we'll come to a point where guys won't be afraid anymore to bring it up. And then you imagine what it would do for the cause if somebody that is playing would come out and having the support of all his teammates. And then you see all these kids that think that team sport is not for me because there's no one like me that playing in NHL, it will speak so loudly. So that's why we're working and we're doing what we do to sensibilize. And hopefully one day, the hope is that this won't even be an issue anymore. Wherever you come from and your sexual orientation, everybody will feel accepted as just part of the team and just a warrior that comes with you to help you win, and that's it.
We talked before about growing up, our favorite hockey player was whatever brother was playing. Yeah. That was the guy that we were going for. So,
except for Pavel Bure. I mean, not a brother, but an amazing player.
Yes. But who did you look up to coming up?
I wasn't like you guys. It was Wojcicki and Mario Lemieux. Those two guys were just amazing, and Mario played in Quebec.
Yeah.
In the Quebec League, I was right there, right? So I could see him, so it was just amazing. The thing is, when I was a kid and I was playing, I didn't see color. I was just playing, I was just having fun. Yes, I faced a lot of
racism. They saw you though, George.
Yeah.
Did you hear color?
Yes, I did hear color. I did felt racism, but when I looked it up, I didn't look at just some, and maybe because there wasn't any anyway.
Right.
There was just Grand Fury, I think, when I was looking it up. Yeah. And then, so I look at the best player, and then I just, you know, I wanted to be like them, right? But yeah, I faced a lot of hurdles to get to there, but it didn't make me frustrated to the point that I was just looking for representation, you know, to be role model, right? I was just like, you know what, that player is awesome, and hopefully I can play in the league and be like them. I didn't quite end up like Wayne and Mario, but
not many of us do. Don't worry. Don't hold it against you.
I will say, but when I played, like when we play like ball hockey,
yeah,
it, as kids, if I was going, I'm Grant Fuhr. Like I'm flying the Grant Fuhr flag. So that was like having that one, or having a handful of players in the NHL when I was growing up, like that representation meant something for me. So when I was, you know, trying to be in my brain, like be as excellent as Grant Fuhr, like, all right, this is who I'm representing. So that was important. And now, hopefully the numbers will increase over time. You'll see more Latin players. You know, Austin Matthews is a superstar in the NHL, and he's of Latin descent. And that's gonna inspire a whole generation of kids. And we'll see it, you know, in 10 years or 20 years or 30 years. And hopefully there's some more brothers and some Asian kids that play hockey, and they can represent for their communities. And then just continue to grow the game globally. Because then, you know, it's like the next generations after that, like, oh, I can be that because I see it.
Yeah.
And that's very important.
Yeah.
It's even small stuff, though. Like, we talk about going to different cities, and, you know, I'll go to an arena in one city on one night for a hockey game, and the playlist is entirely different than the next night when it's a basketball game.
Oh, it's like it's Morgan Wallen on the Saturday night, yes, and then Sunday it's Drake.
Yes, that's right. And I'm like, but, like, I'm a fan of both, and there's many people, I assume, who, you know, have seasons for both, or kids who are interested in both, so just connecting, like, culturally on that level, I think there's still some room to grow.
Yeah, that's definitely like where we might have some gaps, you know, as a league. But you know, again, I think it's exciting because I feel like as a league, we have a lot of room to grow. And like you talked about, we, you know, globally, if we, you know, open this thing up the way that we hope to, by making it, you know, an inclusive community, you know, we already know how much we love hockey and we think it's the greatest sport in the world, but I think, you know, the rest of the world will see it for that reason.
And I think people will notice some things that they're surprised by. Like, talking about the music, I remember the Lightning were in town to play the Leafs, and I was, you know, walking down the back halls, and I was hearing, like, the hardest trap music. I was like,
wait, wasn't that from the Leafs dressing room when Michael Bunting was here?
Well, no. Well, Marner has their big booty mix.
Yeah, so I thought they're Bunting. Bunting or Marner.
So they got, like, a lot of, like, you know, EDM and, like, some house and some trap on it. But, like, no, I'm talking about the Lightning dressing room. I don't know if you were on the team at the time or who was running the aux cord at the time. But it was like, I was like, damn, like, I don't even listen to anything this hard because it's just unsettling.
What? You're probably like, oh, yeah, I respect that Nicki Minaj track.
It's like all 305 songs. Like, just Rick Ross. Greatest hits.
Yeah. Rick Ross. Yeah, just run.
Well, I've run the locker room tunes for a while.
Have you?
So it was you.
Oh, okay.
It was you.
All right.
It might have been me if it was that year. But, yeah, I mean, again, like a very simple thing like that. Like I'll play rock music until the coach has his meeting. And then after the meeting, I play hip hop. And usually around like 35, 40 minutes left on the clock, we kind of transition into EDM. And I selfishly play the hip hop because that's like my time in the locker room to warm up. Nice. So it's like, you know, it's, again, I think it's like that side of things, that part of the culture, like everyone has some sort of affinity to it and some sort of connection to it. And, you know, when you create that kind of environment, it brings everyone together. You know, you can talk about a song that you were maybe getting close with a girl in eighth grade, you know. my music now, I'm the older guy in the stage, might be a little
nice and slow.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, so it's funny. It brings back different memories for different guys. And, again, you find out more about, you know, someone just through that small aspect of life.
Also, you have to adapt because when I played in Edmonton, I didn't have a guy like you playing hip hop. They were playing country music.
I can imagine, bro.
And
just Garth Brooks all day.
Listening to country music before getting into a war.
Yeah, seriously.
It was not too motivating. But after a while, listening to it, you're getting used to it, you know, because it's in, you know, out west in Alberta, country was very popular. But the hockey culture is awesome because everybody has their own music that they play on sometimes. And you get accustomed to it. You take turns. We're taking turns back then. We didn't just have one guy that does it. Every day, somebody would bring something different. And you just accepted it, whether it was not what you were liking or not. And that's what makes it. That's what a team is, right? Adapting and getting to learn someone just through their music sometimes.
Well, you're a better man than me. I would have my noise canceling on beats. I was like, I can't get ready. Well, how often in your career were you the only black dude in the room?
It's crazy because most of my career, other than Edmonton, in Edmonton one time were five of us.
Yeah,
that was the year.
Oh, we know.
And yeah. It'll never happen again. Ensign Carter, Mike Greer, Joaquin Gay, Sean Brown. When I played in Phoenix, I was alone in Pittsburgh. I was alone in Montreal too. But that time in Edmonton, it kind of looked like at that year that it was going to start growing, that minority was going to get more interest in hockey. But the numbers kind of went down a bit and hasn't been really high. So, and that's why lately when we looked at stuff, it was important to show everyone that even though that there's not a lot of representation, it's a safe sport for any minorities, any black kids that want to play hockey. And that's why we try to bring hockey to different communities, to the parents, to show them that, you know, it's a good sport, it's a safe sport for you, and we want to make it more accessible. Sometimes it's for many reasons, but we're bringing gears to them. But there's so many programs that we're creating, and guys in our group have initiative to help to grow the games, to make sure that more minorities get interested. Because at the end of the day, like Kevin said earlier, we just want the NHL to grow throughout the world, throughout the states, and there's a lot of space for growing, for TV rights and all that stuff. And the more I think kids will get to learn and see this beautiful sport, the more we're gonna wanna play and get involved.
Sometimes you can't move people by morals, you can move them by money. So you show them the business case, that'll help. Was it different going to the arena every day when you were in Edmonton and you had those guys with you? Did it feel different for you?
To be honest with you, no. Because once you make it to the NHL, right, it's like when you look at the team, it's a family and you're going to war together, right? We realized more the impact of it when the media started talking about how historical that it was. But we've never once sat down and be like, oh my God, there's five of us out there. We all knew that we had to face extra hurdles to be there. But why talking about it? Why bringing it up? We were there now. So we never really mentioned it much. It's just after when people start talking about it, we're like, oh, it's cool. Hopefully it'll help grow. But it's not a subject that it would have because in the NHL, once you're there, everybody, y'all respect it. Like we're people come from all different backgrounds and we get to know one another and we play together, right? We like one another. So we travel together. We spend so much time together. So to me, whether it was someone of my color or different, it didn't matter. It was all the same, right? But I could understand the impact and how historical this was. But unfortunately, at that time, it didn't grow like we thought it would when this happened. Because it was, again, it was a coincidence that it happened that time. The others didn't decide in 2000 to be, okay, let's make a lineup like that. Teams, the NHL want to win. They try to do the best lineup they can to win, right? Not to please or to be part of history, right? You try to do the best lineup you can to win the Stanley Cup.
Well, speaking of money, I hope we're not doing credit card roulette on this. We're making the rookies pay. Is this one of the situations where the star pays?
This is rookie party.
It would be an advantage for you guys because...
How so?
Because when you just eat salad and cauliflower, right, you guys are eating the most expensive stuff.
Yeah.
And you see, so it would be a disadvantage for me because if I would just add that meal alone, that's way cheaper than... You guys steaks and stuff,
no,
right?
No, we already said we're splitting down the middle.
Yeah, would you like to treat us today, Josh?
This is great.
This is awesome.
May I have some french fries, please?
Oh, yeah, sorry. For
well, you like, should come.
I was hot.
Oh, I know. It's okay. I know I get them eventually.
Oh, that's great.
Right, while we have some experts.
Experts?
Yeah, some experts.
We do have experts?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because... You two have your LeBron Jordan beef.
Oh my gosh.
Ongoing. No, I need to ask a question.
Oh, okay. You're not gonna use this part, but okay, anyway,
don't conversation with you. So we have the great one, Gretzky, mm-hmm. which is the standard bearer. And then you have the kid, his buddy, Connor.
Not my buddy. I mean
you have his phone number on your phone. You guys.
Yeah, so is George.
They're NHL players.
No.
No one else in this room has Connor McDavid's phone number in the phone. Two players and you. He's your
buddy. He wouldn't be like, Cab's my good friend. He'd be like, this guy annoys me once a year.
The message is seen, just not responded to.
Well, I had the green text bubble, so I don't know if he...
You're one of those.
I am one of those, yeah. Samsung for life.
I think no one's going to touch Gretzky's records.
But except the goals one. Ovi is sniffing that one.
Yeah. Oh, okay, fine.
Ovi's in the conversation.
But can you put into context for the layman, like the level that Connor's taken the game to?
I mean, it's incredible. I don't think I never saw it growing this way when I first started playing, you know, in the league. And I think the level of play across the entire league has just gotten faster, more skilled. But anytime someone like Connor comes in and says, all right, I'm taking it like two levels higher, it's incredible. It's unbelievable to watch like firsthand when I'm hopefully on the bench when he's on the ice and just see what he does and a tremendous amount of respect for him because I think he not only is it, you know, natural ability, but he works at it, and he's doing something different that's completely changing our game. I'd see a lot of young kids now that are, you know, trying to do all of his little, you know, drills and stuff that he does over the summer. Like, hockey is being trained differently now because of him. And it's
really?
And kids are being taught differently because of him, because that's the way the game is going. And it's only going to be good for the sport, you know, in that sense, because it's just going to be, you know, more and more exciting.
So it's like Mahomes with the off-platform throws, or Steph with the logo threes. Like, it's changing literally how people train.
Without a doubt. Without a doubt.
You know, a story about Connor is Derek Brassard, when he used to play with him, he told me when they were going to the airport together, because he lived close to Connor, and when he would come and pick him up, you know, guys are dressed to go before you go on a plane, and Connor would be shooting pucks in his driveway, dressed up, shooting pucks. Connor, if one player you would think that doesn't have to do so, it's him. He practices hard, practices all the time, he's focused so much into hockey, and the stuff that he does on the ice, the speed that he has, everybody knows that the speed and how you have to counter. He plays against the best D-man every night out, and he does a highlight reel every week. You know, it's just incredible, the stuff that he could do out there and stuff, and it's so good for the game because it makes it so spectacular. And on top of that, he's an amazing ambassador. How he talks, how he portrayed himself, you know, he's so good for the league. And yeah, you put him in the Kareem's conversation, you could put him in the MJ conversation, which is the highest level in basketball.
It's MJ and LeBron. It's Gretzky and Connor. It's Connor, just, he's got three hearts. He will win a few more MVPs, and hopefully it's in the cards that he wins some Stanley Cups. A bunch of them.
Things. Is there a comp? Like, stylistically, is there someone else that you could really just compare his game to?
Connor?
Yeah.
No. I mean, I think that's the beauty of it, is like, he's the first, you know, he's leading this new generation of players.
It's the iPhone 1?
Yeah, exactly. you know, and I think that's the cool thing about it, is I think maybe we don't recognize it now, but I think, you know, in 10 years, 15 years, you're going to see a lot of people, mostly the majority of the league, playing like that. You know, and even just the hockey in general, I think it's going to trickle down, like I said, all the way to the youth level. So, no, it's incredible. I mean, he had a slow start this year.
Yeah.
And he's, like, third in scoring, you know? So he's a generational player, without a doubt. He's changing the game.
Now even more impressed. Thank you for the education. Now we just need to know from him who he fought that he still wants to fight. But
this one?
Yeah, we'll put that behind a paywall.
No.
We'll release that one.
I think he's fought everybody he wanted to fight.
Or the one guy he never got to fight. Ooh. That he probably wants to fight.
That's right.
Which is me.
Well, we can move to fight over the hill.
Thanks so much for listening once again. Thank you to Kevin Shattenkirk, George LaRocque, and obviously Cabby. Really enjoyed that conversation. If you want more, follow at Players Inclusion on IG and at NHLPA. You're certainly already following the NHL, but if not, guess what? It's at NHL. And stay tuned to this feed. We're going to have more great conversations just like this coming up for you in the near future. Thanks for listening.